And I did want to mention that I got to see the Countermans. I don't know if you remember who they are, but they are a couple that are in charge of Beam Latin America. They came a couple of years ago to our missions conference, and that's how we got connected with Gustavo Gonzalez as far as supporting him. And we got to see them at our Refresh conference that we went to, and they said hello to all of you, and they appreciate all of us as well. And so I just wanted to relay that news as we jump in here to Exodus chapter 4. And we're going to finish up the chapter here in dealing with Moses and even some family issues that he might deal with here tonight. You don't really hear a whole lot about his family from this point forward, but the little bit that you do get, you understand that there are some struggles, but there's also some encouragements as well. But we're going to be talking about the calling of God. And I do truly believe that there is a calling of God in each one of our lives, and sometimes it's for small things, sometimes it's for big things. I don't know if any of you have been called to deliver the whole of Israel out of Egypt. In fact, I don't think any of us have been, but we have been called to come to Him. And depending on our response, that could determine your eternity. But you know, there's also other calls, like the call to reach out to an individual and be the tool that God uses to deliver them from sin. What's that all about? Well, it's how blessed are the feet of those who are sharing the gospel. Well, the calling of just to be there for someone. Have you ever just gotten this? I hope this doesn't sound weird to you, but have you ever just gotten this push to go and talk to someone? This push to go and present Jesus to someone? A push to open up your eyes and see the need that's right in front of you? And I'm not talking about your spouse, you know, shoving you. Hey, you need to go do this. But just in that sense that God has placed it upon your heart to go and to do something. And you know, you recognize that. And so, like I said, I think God has this call upon our lives to where initially that needs to happen through salvation. But there are pushes to be able to go and to do what he's called us to do. And a lot of that could be involved with someone's eternity. And being able to present the gospel. So as we get into this tonight, we find ourselves back at the point where Moses was talking to God, and God presented himself in a burning bush, which is an absolute miracle. But as he comes and he comes to Moses and says, "Hey, I want you to go and to deliver my people." Really check in on that. I want you to go deliver my people. That's what God's stating. But you know, Moses, like so many of us, had some excuses. Maybe you had an excuse today. Oh, the sun is shining too bright. I don't think I can go to church today. You know, something is exaggerated about that, but oh, I'm just too scared to talk to that person today. And yet maybe God's pushing you in that direction. But as we see here, I think this is interesting. We can see God work in miraculous ways. And we can be in agreement with the need that is all across our world today. But yet excuse ourselves from the mission. Why is that? You need to reflect on that personally. But as we jump into this, listen, God wasn't willing to hear the excuses. Instead, he ends up providing a solution for each one of the excuses and even elevates his emotions towards Moses and says, listen, this is going to happen. Get to it. And so as we jump into this, Moses is finally accepting this responsibility. But we got to ask the question, wait a minute. Moses has a job. He's the keeper of the flock. Moses has a family. He has a wife and a couple of kids. What's he going to do there? He has responsibilities. How's this going to work? Do you think that God has a solution for that? I remember this was a massive struggle for me as we came to Illinois. God, what about all the things in the thumb of Michigan that need to be done? What about the people that I think that need me? What are they going to do? What about all the responsibilities? What about everything that's there? And all of a sudden, I seem to alleviate God's power in my mind, asking these questions, presenting my own doubts. Not trusting in him that he's got a plan. And we've got to continue to trust along the way as God calls us to where, to who we need to go to. So let's jump into this here tonight. We're going to start off with verse number 18. But this first point is the calling of God does not negate human responsibility. And that goes along with that. It does not negate human responsibility. So in verse number 18, it says, "And Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, Let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren, which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. And Jethro said to Moses, Go in peace." So at this point, we see that God has made a calling upon Moses' life to go and to deliver his people. But yet, there are some responsibilities that he needs to take care of. It's not like he can just drop everything and walk away. There is some responsibilities in dealing with his father-in-law, his family, and dealing with his wife and his kids. And yet, here he is. He's coming before him humbly and taking care of what needs to happen, saying, "Listen, Jethro, listen, father-in-law, I do need to do this. please let me go. Please move through this. And I think truly that God is in action, already moving Jethro's heart, despite whatever belief that Jethro does have in God. Because we'll find out later in Exodus chapter 18 that Jethro was actually open to multiple gods, and he finally comes down to the point where God is God. So he's open to that. So it doesn't matter as far as whether he sees God as truly God, and this is the right calling. It's a matter of I truly believe that God is working in his heart to say, hey, this is the right way to go. And that's exactly what he does. He says, hey, go. It's okay. Go in peace. Would most family members say that to you when you're threatening to take their daughter away? I remember going to my father-in-law and saying, hey, I know we live 10 minutes away from you, 15 minutes away from you, but I believe that God's calling us to Illinois. So you're going to take my grandkids and my daughter away from me, huh? That stirred up some emotions inside of him, inside of my father-in-law. That was a difficult meeting to be able to jump into and to present of, hey, God, I think God's doing this. I think we're going to make this move. What do you guys think? And finally, they were able to give their blessing, right? Because they had to work through all the emotions. But this is exactly where Jethro is. Hey, listen, I'm not going to hate your guts in this moment. Go in peace. Go in peace. And I really do believe that God was preparing, God was working in the people as he did even in Pharaoh's heart as he presents later on. But you know, in this, I think Moses' presentation of this meeting wasn't quite spot on, okay? Let me see if I can go back to that. I think that's in, okay, verse number 18. Let's read through that again. And Moses went and returned to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said unto him, let me go, I pray thee, and return unto my brethren which are in Egypt, and see whether they be yet alive. Do you find the humor in that? I saw one laugh over here, okay? Do you find the humor in that? If you're presenting something and saying, hey, I got to leave my job here to go and to deliver some people that I don't even know if they're alive. Does he still have full faith in, does he even have full faith in God, that God has placed this mission in front of him? Well, he said, yeah, I'll go because God got mad at me, but I don't even know if these people are alive. Even though God said, I want you to deliver my people. I'm hearing their cries. Go and do it. And he said, well, I don't know if they're even alive, but Jethro, I need to go. And even with poor presentation, Jethro agrees. He sends him on his way. Go in peace. I think that's important for us to recognize that just because God calls us to do certain things, we do need to recognize that there are human responsibilities around us that we need to be able to communicate. You say, well, where do you see that in other ways in Scripture? Well, I would encourage you to go tonight or tomorrow morning and read the letter of Philemon. You know what that's all about? That's about Paul talking to another Christian and saying, hey, I realize that your slave was no good to you. And he was gone, he left, but he's coming back to you and he's coming to present himself. Would you deal right with him based on my relationship with you as a Christian, but also on your relationship with God? And so there is this understanding that we do have human responsibility of there are things that we are in charge of, that we are accountable for, that we need to do the business. We don't just drop and run. There is responsibility. But that's a minor point in the midst of this passage, we jump on into the next point here. The calling of God is prepared by God. And I've already hinted on this, but we see that some more and starting in verses 19. Okay, in verse 19, it says, "And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, Go, return unto Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life." Do you think that that was running through Moses' mind? "And I was exiled for killing an Egyptian. Or is there somebody going to be there that has the authority to be able to take my life? Am I going into a situation where it's a done deal? I might not even be able to deliver these people because they want to take my life. Who's going to deliver me?" And yet God has already prepared the way. Moses, listen, anybody that would want to take your life, anyone that wants revenge for this, they are gone. This barrier is knocked down by God. But you go into verse number 20, it says, "And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them upon an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt." So he's making his way back. "And Moses took the rod of God in his hand." He took the rod of God in his hand in verse 21, "And the Lord said unto Moses, When thou goest to return into Egypt, see that thou do all those wonders before Pharaoh, which I have put in thine hand. But I will harden his heart, and he shall not let the people go." We've heard this before when God had already talked to him from the flaming bush. In verse number 22, "And thou shalt say unto Pharaoh, Thus saith the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn." Verse 23, "And I say unto thee, let my son go, that he may serve me. And if thou refuse to let him go, behold, I will slay thy son." Here's a little prophecy here that's going to be happening very, very soon. We'll see it come to fruition on the last plague, to where Pharaoh's not giving in, but there is a last straw. It ends up giving in to God. So God says, "I will slay thy son, even thy firstborn." So even though Moses might not be in total faith as he moves forward, by the way, sometimes we might struggle being able to move forward, but if God's calling us, we need to do it. We just need to do it. You might not be totally there like Moses here. You might have some questions along the way. You might have some concerns, but we just need to start taking the first step. And that's exactly what Moses was doing here. He starts moving along. He takes his wife and his sons. He starts off. He takes the rod of God in his hand. The rod God said he would use to prove his authority, that he would do miracles with, that he set down and it turned into a serpent. And then when he picked it back up, it turned back into the rod. I think that is super interesting in how God has brought Moses to this place and preparing him for it. Why didn't God get a hold of Moses when he had all the resources and the opportunity and the connections of Egypt? Why didn't he say, "Moses, deliver my people. You have the ear of Pharaoh. Go work on behalf of my people. Get them out. I want you to deliver. You've got the money. You've got the resources. You've got all these connections." And yet God never calls him at that point. He waits until Moses is stripped of everything except for, you know, the thing that he owned? Because remember, the flock that he was watching was not his. It was Jethro's. You know the thing that he owned? A rod. Man, that's worth a lot of money, isn't it? It's worth a lot to who? Moses. Moses, the one that's watching over these sheep and trying to protect and trying to guide and trying to gain stability with this tool that he has. And it might not be worth much to the next guy, but it's worth a lot to him in the sense of his job. And yet it's interesting in how God uses the little that Moses has to be able to show the power of God. I was sharing this with our Sunday school class this morning. Got a little ahead of myself. I said, it's interesting in how little we have, but yet God can do much with it. It's amazing how in asking Moses to take what he had to go and do his work, we see God's power on display. I asked that question, why wouldn't God call Moses to deliver his people when he had the connections and the power of Egypt? Because God wanted to make sure that his power was on display. And that every time since then, as you look throughout Scripture, when he comes back and he says, I was the God of your fathers, the one that set you free from Egypt, the one that brought the plagues, the one that defied all other imaginary gods. Listen, this is the God of the heavens, and there is no doubt. There is no doubt that it's his power. But you know, folks, listen, so many times we give our excuses because all we've got is a rod in our hand. And we doubt what God can do with what we have. But he's called us to be stewards of what we have, not what we wish we would have. How many of you, if you were given $1 million tonight, anybody would be excited about that? Anybody? Okay, just me. And okay, there's a few, okay. All right, anybody else want to actually say the truth? Okay, we would love $1 million. Have you ever thought about what you could do with $1 million? Oh, you start off spiritually, right? Oh, I would give 10% to the church, right? Automatically. Oh, there's so many missionaries I could support with $1 million. So many church buildings that I could build with $1 million. Guess what? Those are just dreams. What are you doing with what you've got right now? What you're doing with whatever God's given you right now, whatever tools that he's placed in your hands would show you the pattern that would apply when he does give more. Are you responsible with what he's got, what he's given to you right now? Say, what do you mean? I don't have much money. I can't do much. Do you remember Jesus talking about the widow that gave everything that she could? And it was worth so much more than all the ones that could drop in all the coins and make it really loud, you know, all the ones that they could give hundreds, you know, thousands, all the things that they could give. It was worth so much more because it was everything that she could give. What are we doing with what we have? Why are we always questioning what God's given us? Why are we questioning that? We have our homes so we can be hospitable. We have our friends so that we can encourage and challenge and exhort and confront towards Jesus. We have our church that we can do all these one another's with. But if we're always wishing for more, are we really doing what God's called us to do with what we have? That's a question that we need to think through. Oh, for crying out loud, God brought me to Illinois. Oh, come on. If only I didn't have to live in Taylorville, Illinois. Or Edinburgh, or Morrisonville, or fill in the blank, right? How many times have we complained? And yet, what do we have? Every good and perfect gift that comes from the Father of lights. What are we doing with what we have? I just think that this is so interesting in how, here's a rod, here's a stick. Go take that. Show God's authority through this stick. Take it. God again reassures and lays out the plan for Moses. Go and do all these wonders before Pharaoh and his people, and God's already equipped him to be able to do it. And yes, Pharaoh's going to have a hard heart. And you say, well, wait a minute, is that God hardening his heart? Yes, it does mention that. Is it taking the free will out of it? And we'll talk a little bit more of that later on. No, it doesn't. God knows who this man is, knows where his heart's at, and just uses what he's already got. But as he uses him as a hardened heart to show more of who God is and to prove his power and that he is the God of everything and everyone, this will be a difficult task ahead, but yet God has equipped Moses to be able to do it. He's preparing for his calling. So there shouldn't be any doubt. There shouldn't be any concern. God, you've got this. Let's jump into that next point. The calling of God demands full consecration. The calling of God demands full consecration, full separation, full surrender to him. Let's go into verse number 24. And it came to pass, by the way, in the end, that the Lord met him and sought to kill him. Has anybody ever read this before? Maybe as you're breezing through and you're thinking, what in the world? What scribe messed up there? This is totally out of the blue. Wait a minute. God has called Moses to go and deliver his people, and yet he's going to kill him. What's going on? Well, you got to understand the context, and this is going to be a weird context, so just be brave with me tonight. Be courageous. We can do this together. Here we go. Verse number 25. Then Zipporah, his wife, took a sharp stone and cut off the foreskin of her son and cast it at his feet and said, surely a bloody husband art thou to me. Whoa. I would hate to be a fly on the wall in that debate, right? Number 26. So he let him go. Then she said, a bloody husband thou art because of the circumcision. So what is going on here? Well, understanding within the context and with what God has called them to, remember there is one thing that God has stated, that this is how you identify as being my people. And we see that in Genesis chapter 17 and verse number 11. And 12, and it says, and ye shall circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and it shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. Verse 12, and he that is 8 days old shall be circumcised among you, every man child in your generations. He that is born in the house or bought with money of any stranger, which is not of thy seed. And so God has called the males to this act to identify with God. And obviously, Moses has not kept up with this because he was a stranger in a strange land. And this isn't their culture. This isn't their thing. This isn't what they usually do because they're not the ones that identify with God. And yet, all of a sudden, God is going to judge him for not fully committing to being his people, even his sons. This is it. If you can't fully commit to the cause, I will set an example for you. I will set an example of you. God was calling Moses to deliver his people, but Moses wasn't even willing to fulfill what God had stated for his people. There is an example that needs to be set. What kind of a leader would Moses be if he wasn't willing to do what God had called him to do? What kind of example would he set for others if he did not do what needed to be done? And you know what? This was a difficult scenario. Because we'll find out later in Exodus chapter 18 that Zipporah didn't come along with Moses to Egypt. The sons didn't either. You'll find it in verse number 1. It says, when Jethro, this is after back at Mount Sinai, after they're all out of Egypt, it says, when Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, and that the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after he had sent her back. Whoa, that is intense. God called him to do something, and she wasn't in full agreement with it. So Moses ends up sending her back to her dad to stay and to be taken care of there while he went and did God's mission. Would that be difficult for you? That would surely be difficult for me. Full surrender. What did God do? He called Moses. And Moses needed to do this even without his wife and kids because they were not in full agreement. That would have been a total difficulty. Do you know what kind of influence that would have had if his wife was there consistently saying, I don't believe this. I'm not on board with this. Getting mad whenever God calls Moses to do a specific thing in that full consecration, that full submission. See, well, what kind of application? So if my wife doesn't do what I think that we should do, then I just need to leave her, right? No, bad application. I think there's an understanding here that we need to see the reality of what God has called us to, and we need to surrender. But we also need to support our spouses. When God says, move, we move. I know how important my wife is to my ministry here. She is a huge help, huge benefit. I don't know how I would be able to do ministry in the same capacity without my wife. I can't imagine trying to be Moses leading the people of God without his helpmate. This would be such a crazy scenario, but we need to understand what he's working through, what he's walking through, what the difficulties that are before him. And even in the scenario, listen, did she even believe in God? Obviously, she wasn't on the same page. She wasn't there. Her dad was a priest. Maybe she had all kinds of other gods that she was serving. In this difficulty here, he still committed. He still walked forward. And we see that in Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. We see even in the New Testament, we see, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. If we are fulfilling the calling of God, we need to do what is necessary. That's what's reasonable. And all that God has done for us,
and all that God has sacrificed for us, we should be it would be reasonable for us just to fully consecrate ourselves, fully invest ourselves in what God has done, become that living sacrifice. We truly need to commit to that. But that's a part of the calling of God. But as we see here in this last point, we see that the calling of God often includes teamwork. It includes teamwork. And we see here in verse number 27, it says, "And the Lord said to Aaron, go into the wilderness to meet Moses." And he went. Do you find any excuses there? You don't. He just went. "Go into the wilderness to meet Moses." And he went and met him in the Mount of God and kissed him. And Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord who had sent him and all the signs which he had commanded him. He got to tell Aaron all about it. "And Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshiped." Finally, right? God is answering prayer. He's in the midst of it. It's not completed yet. But finally, he has heard us in our affliction. But here we see that God has provided someone who can go alongside him, alongside Moses, in order to be able to communicate. And that was Aaron. And he prepared him in a great fashion, in a very extensive manner. "Hey, go out into the wilderness. Go and meet up with him." And Moses is communicating, "Hey, this is our mission." And he just jumps in and they both go together. You know what? I love it that God has created community to work together. To be able to encourage, to be able to exhort, to be able to love, to do the one another's. And he's showing here, listen, that this is a blessing of God's calling. And even as we see that in the New Testament, we not only see that in the Old Testament. I mean, think about all the things in the Old Testament and how God created community to be able to work together. We think of Noah. Did he build the ark on his own? No. His family was along with him to be able to build this ark and to go out and to do what God had called him to do. Abraham, was he alone? No. His family was alongside of him, and even God came alongside of him and communicated with him. And he had other family members. You go on to others in throughout the Old Testament, and how there was multiples that would come together to be able to do what God had called them to do. I mean, even thinking of David and all the things that he had done, he had all these people to support him to do what God had called him to do. You go over to the New Testament, and the New Testament is expressive in how even Jesus in his example has 12 disciples that gather around him to do the work and to be encouraged by and to jump forward with in the calling that God's put upon them. And even Paul and Peter and all the things that's going on here. And we even have I heard this passage this past week and how important teamwork is. In 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 9 through 13, he says here, "Do thy diligence to come shortly unto me." This is Paul communicating to Timothy. "Work hard, come to me. For Demas, another co-worker, hath forsaken me, having loved this present world, and is departed unto Thessalonica. Christians to Galatia, Titus unto Dalmatia." So all these people that he was working alongside of, not all of them are forsaken, just Demas, but these other guys were working in different areas. It says, "Only Luke is with me. Take Mark and bring him with thee, for he's profitable to me for the ministry. And Tychicus have I sent to Ephesus. The cloak that I left at Troas with Carpus, when thou comest, bring with thee, and the books, but especially the parchments." You're thinking, wow, God has blessed us with a team. And Paul depended on that very greatly in order to be able to go and do the calling of God. And he's even begging, hey, Timothy, come and do whatever you can to get here. Come, come be a part of this. And I've lost these, and they're over here working, but I need you to be a part of this. And Luke's here with me, but I need some more to be a part of what's moving forward. I think of Moses and Aaron working together to be able to do what God's called them to do. It's such a blessing that God does give us the people that we need in order to move forward and to have confrontation, to have exhortation, to have encouragement, to be able to move forward in his calling. And I think that's an important thing to display. But you know what? There's a question here. Are you invested in the team? What if Aaron would have said, Moses has got this? God, you don't need me. I mean, I don't have much to work with. I can't speak, or I can't do this or that. God created a team to work together. And what did he do? He got up and he walked into the wilderness to find his brother. Are you invested in the team? Are you invested in what God's doing? Have you seen God work through calling you to him, to work, to be a part of his mission? Have you seen this? Are you willing to acknowledge that, yeah, we do have human responsibilities that we need to take care of and deal with, but are we trusting that God is preparing the way to do what he's called us to do? Are we giving in to God? Are we in absolute surrender, and are we investing in the team that God has actually pulled together for the sake of this ministry? Are we doing these things, these principles that are here right on display for us to be able to see? Are we actually applying them? See, we can do what we talked about in the very beginning. You know, it's interesting how we've seen the work of God on display. We've seen how people are saved because of the work of God. We've seen how God has done miraculous things. And we look out all over our world, our community, and see a massive need. Yeah, what do? Ah, he doesn't need me. Ah, I've got too many other things. We excuse ourselves out of his mission. Why are we doing that? Cast out the excuses. Jump on board. God prepares the way. Trust in his way. And if you're here tonight and you've never come to him for salvation initially, listen, God's calling. God's calling. Don't let it go anymore. Trust. He's prepared the way. You're here. You're here. You've heard. Why not respond? Full surrender. Trusting in him. Putting your faith in him. Why not respond? Believe me, it'll be the best thing you would ever do. Let's pray. God, we thank you so much for your truth and this example and the principles that could be taken out here. God, there are some struggles in ministry, ministering in the calling that you've called us to. God, there are some struggles there, even with family. And God, help us to be surrendered. Help us to trust you've prepared the way, that you're making a way when there seems to be no way. You're making it. You're equipping. You've already given us what we have. Help us to do with what we have for your mission. God, thank you for allowing us to hear your message and to respond. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's just take a few moments.